Let's turn our attention to medical matters now and the UK government medical apprenticeship. And we're going to talk with Alan Barsam to learn a little bit more about this and the impact it could have on surgery. So medical apprenticeships, it's just been recently announced. So what is the difference here between the studies that medical practitioners, doctors would normally undertake?
People would normally apply after school or occasionally after one degree to go to medical school. Medical school is 5 or 6 years, and if you've already done a science degree, then it can be shortened during a what's called a postgraduate medical scheme. Then there's 2 years as a foundation doctor, where you do a combination of medicine and surgery, normally in hospital on the wards. And then people apply to either specialty training or training associated with being a general practitioner. And that training can be anywhere from 3 years, can be up to 9 years or more for some surgical specialties. In ophthalmology, it's 7 years for the specialty training, what's called run-through training. But then at the end of those 7 years, people will normally apply to do subspecialty fellowships, which is very common in all of the surgical specialties and also some of the medical specialties, where people focus to an even higher level on one specific element of that specialty. That's typically between 1 and 3 years. So you're really looking at, for a surgical specialty, 5 or 6 years of medical school, 2 years as a foundation doctor, and then 7 years minimum of run-through training, which takes you to 15 years, and then an extra 1 or 3 years of fellowship. So it's up to 18 years, albeit you're working as a doctor. And within the NHS, the majority of face-to-face care, if you like, is often delivered not by consultants because of this huge bottleneck, if you like, or huge funnel of trainees that are required to, you know, replenish consultants as they leave the workforce, if you like.
What makes this different? Does it allow people to join at different stages? Does it allow people to perhaps practice under supervision earlier? What are the differences?
Yeah, I don't think that any of these specifics of apprenticeships have actually been worked out. I think that the government are just toying with the idea of what can they do to shorten training and to shorten time in medical school. I mean, they have just announced that they plan to double the number of medical students in the UK, but they're looking at ways of just increasing the available numbers of doctors and nurses. If there was going to be shortening of the training time, then it is likely that there would be kind of tiers of consultant created, which is how it works often in Europe. So you have in ophthalmology what's called office-based ophthalmologists who do a lot of the medical ophthalmology. They do a lot of the examinations, but they don't do surgery. And then the ones that have gone through kind of other levels of training, if you like, do surgery. And then the ones that do surgery end up doing more surgery. So there's a little bit of a stratification, if you like, of expertise that happens there. But you know, that happens in countries where they have a lot more ophthalmologists. And again, I don't believe that the government has laid out where, you know, if you double the number of medical school numbers, are they also going to double the number of training places in hospital? Because everything needs to be funded and everything comes with resource allocation. And I'm not sure how much they've worked that out. But I know that the Royal College of Ophthalmologists, you know, have done workforce planning and have said that more ophthalmologists are needed. You know, people living longer with more eye conditions, and there are more eye conditions that are treatable. So the requirement for ophthalmologists is greater as the years go by.
The apprenticeships then, does that mean that a doctor going through this, or someone going through this apprenticeship, would have sort of no fees to pay, would be salaried more? Is it looking more enticing, I suppose, is the word I'm looking for people to come into the medical profession? And do you think it has that at the moment?
That's a good question, is that where is the attrition rate and why is there a kind of problem of enough doctors? You know, one of them obviously is just not training enough, and that's why the government have decided to train more. But there is a very high attrition rate, which means that there's a very high rate of people that choose to either leave medicine or to continue practicing medicine but in another country. I would hope that they will also look at ways of how can they better retain doctors and consultants and surgeons, both within the NHS and maybe also within the private sector. In terms of would the apprenticeships be more enticing? Well, I think if training is shorter, probably it will be more appealing. And if you're paid as well, as nurses are when they train, whereas doctors aren't when you're in medical school at least, then again, it may be more appealing. But these things all come at a cost. I think that people that have criticised the proposal to increase medical school places have done so citing that it only potentially addresses one part of the problem, and another part of the problem is actually retention. And there would be a
Mm.
concern that you might train double the number of doctors, but you might have double the number of doctors leaving to go and practice in other countries where the working conditions are better, where they're not under so much pressure, where the pay and the remuneration is better. You know, there are a variety of reasons why people leave. And I think that in years gone by, we lived in a world where people didn't have the same awareness of what other people are doing. One of the downsides, if you like, with the social media world is that we seem to always know what everyone else is doing all the time. And all of a sudden, you realize that other people are able to take lunch breaks and go for a stroll in the middle of the day and work from home and organize things for their kids or have hobbies and other activities. And medicine requires a huge sacrifice, which is still one that people are prepared to take. In medical school places, I believe there are sometimes 10 applicants for every one place. So I don't believe that there'll be any shortage of people wanting to do medicine because it's such a kind of special and unique career. But what seems like a really good idea when you're bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, and full of energy and without any family commitments whatsoever as a 17-year-old becomes very different when you're in your 30s, let's say, and you might have a spouse, kids, and other things in life, and you have an awareness of the fact that there's other things going on. And maybe that is on account of the fact that they have more awareness of the alternatives in life.
Would you say ophthalmology is perhaps adversely affected? You know, we've spoken in the past to, around this topic. You know, it seems that ophthalmology is sometimes far down the list when it comes to having the resourcing highlight things like, you know, the cataract operations, which are, I suppose, straightforward if I can use that term compared to other procedures, but they can make a vast difference to someone's lives. Yet the waiting lists seem to be growing and growing.
Ophthalmology has a variety of challenges at the moment in the UK. In no particular order, those challenges are that about half of all cataracts in the UK are now done in the independent sector, where most of the cataract surgery, or at least 50% on approximately, is actually taking place. And they do so with incredible efficiency, and their presence essentially does make the waiting list shorter than it would be otherwise. But the flip side of that is that they tend to cherry pick the more routine, straightforward cases to some extent, which leaves the NHS unit with the more complex, difficult cases, often where patients have a variety of different eye diseases, not just the cataract, but they might have cataract and glaucoma, for example, or cataract and retina problems or other things, which makes the surgery more challenging in the NHS. And at the moment, the NHS is where all the training needs to occur. And when you need to learn cataract surgery, you typically don't want to be learning on those kind of complex, difficult patients because cataract surgery, as you can imagine, as microsurgery is challenging enough. So it's making training much more of a challenge. And there is a request that these independent sector places will provide training as well. But these independent sector places that provide NHS care are doing so at a profit. That's why they're there. That's how they're able to employ staff. And that's how they're able to grow and invest and do all of those things. So then it begs the question, whatever that profit margin is, if that money was all invested in the NHS, would the NHS potentially be better? So they've come in to fill the gap because the NHS wasn't coping with respect to the volume of work that was required and waiting lists were too long. But it now creates this problem where they're getting more and more efficient and more profitable, and the NHS is becoming more and more of a difficult place in which to do and learn cataract surgery. So the disparity between what the NHS is capable and able to provide and what the independent sector is capable and willing to provide will grow. And I'm not talking about private practice, that's different. That's people that can pay for surgery or are insured. I'm just talking about independent sector providers of NHS care.
So again, we're looking back again then, aren't we, at funding, decent salaries for the staff within the NHS at the moment. And you know, you've mentioned the word retention a few times. That's going to be a huge one as well. So you know, we're really looking quite far down the road to perhaps any kind of improvement. Do you see that light at the end of the tunnel, or is it still a bit up in the air at the moment for you?
I mean, that's a good point that you could plan right now today to double the medical school intake, which I imagine won't be possible for at least a year or two because the medical schools themselves will need to staff, plan, prepare, equip in order to actually allow them to take more students in. And then even if you combine that with some kind of shortening of training, which I think is possible and could have some benefits, you know, in terms of like the ability of someone to be able to do competent or proficient cataract surgery, you're still looking at over a decade before any of these people come out and actually working independently. So it doesn't give you a solution to the problem happening over the next few years. And I think they will continue to rely more and more on the independent sector. I suppose, let's say, next government being a Labour government might reduce how they remunerate independent sector cataract surgery in the private sector. So the margins will be lower, the profit will be less. But then there's the risk that those businesses suffer, they go under. they can't cope, they can't reinvest, they can't provide the service, and the NHS isn't able to provide the service. So there's an uncomfortable relationship going on at the moment between the government, the NHS, and the independent sector in ophthalmology.
A real butterfly effect, I think, here when whatever path they seem to go down at the moment. No doubt the story will continue. We'll continue to follow this as well. But for the moment, Alan Barson, thank you for speaking with us on RNIB Connect Radio.
And it's been a pleasure.